Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you off and running on Thursday, the final day of July already. It's the 31st of July. Tom Fairbanks, there was a pretty good rainstorm over in the Reddington Pass area last night, up to an inch and a half. Didn't make it over to our neck of the woods, but there is some rain, hopefully, in the forecast today. But then, wow, back up to nearly 110 again. I can't recall a stranger in my 37 and a half years here. Just kind of a strange summer rainy season where you get bright blue skies in July and late July. It's not the way it's supposed to be.
Well, we're going into August.
Oh, yes, we are going into August.
And I'm looking for cooler temperatures. Where are you?
Yeah, cooler temperatures. Well, we still have, July, we've got August and September to try to get some rain in here because we usually think of the rainy season as a three-month deal. We'll see what happens. Anyway, I've got a very busy show today. By the way, tomorrow on our Friday Focus interview, the Chief of Police, Chad Kazmar, will be our Friday Focus interview, and my media co-host will be Paul Ingram from TucsonSentinel.com, the award-winning Paul Ingram. Paul seems to rack up a bunch of awards and well-deserved. We're in the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio, part of the Bustos Media Center, five radio stations under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's voice for trusted news and talk. As far as my show, we've completed now 14 and a half years, which is great. We'll push our way to year number 15 at the end of the year. We have our worldwide live listening. You can listen to the program live during the noon hour on my website, buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. But one thing we have that kvoi.com doesn't have are all of my podcasts available going back to the first week of January 2011, and we try to get the day's show up by the dinner hour. So if you missed a portion of the program, missed the show altogether, you can listen. A lot of people do on the podcast. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Sean, my friend Sean McCluskey, and his team at Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Once a month, one of my favorite segments, because I love to travel and I love talking about airplanes and going places, Brian Kidd comes in. And Brian is the Deputy Chief of Strategic Marketing and Air Service Development for Tucson International Airport, really the Tucson Airport Authority, because Tucson International Airport is part of that umbrella, which includes the general aviation field, Ryanair, as well. Hey, Brian, how are you?
Doing well, Bill. Good to see you.
You've been kind of on the road, tourism event up in Phoenix. What was the message that you were hearing from the local Arizona people about tourism? Are we taking a hit like from perhaps Canadian and Mexican visitors? Are you hearing that?
Yes, definitely hasn't had an impact. That would hit Phoenix worse than us, of course, but we are hoping that that's going to calm down by next season. I mean, the 24-25 season was definitely hit hard, so we're cautiously optimistic that we'll get a little bit closer to normal the next go around. But people start booking those trips not that far away. I know it's already almost August, and before you know it, we'll be in our peak season again.
Yeah, people are already booking. I know I have for the Thanksgiving week, and you can win a trivial contest on this one. And I think you probably you would know the answer to this, but I know people know fares go up Thanksgiving week, but guess what it's like to fly on Thanksgiving Day?
It's a good deal.
It is an excellent deal, and I'll be doing it, actually, taking advantage of it. It's a better way to, if you're looking for a better price point, you will pay a little bit more, perhaps, on your way to your destination if you're leaving on the previous weekend. But for sure, If you want to maybe have turkey dinner, or if you're not into turkey, a plant-based Thanksgiving, maybe have it on Black Friday.
Right.
The day after. I mean, it's still kind of the holiday
still
weekend.
The weekend.
It's still the weekend. Yeah. But that's kind of a little tip here from the Buckmaster Show. But I think the point is that holiday travel is really here already, isn't it?
Right. I mean, in some cases, the booking windows have gotten a little bit shorter. I mean, people are, international still books way out, but domestic is a little shorter. But when people are thinking about their winter schedule and work, you know, school's already going back into session and the school right down the street. So as soon as that kicks in, you start turning towards the winter holidays.
Is there something to booking an international trip? I've heard the kind of the sweet spot, Brian Kidd, is about 6 months out, or what? How does that work?
For a normal demand route, as long as it's not a new route or something unusual going on with it, yeah, definitely the sweet spot is further out, you know, 4 to 6 months. The newest enhancement that you may have seen on the horizon is AI-driven pricing that may
what?
Be catered to your particular self. So instead of, you know, you go online, you look for a fare, you know, $149
yeah.
for everybody's, you know, yeah. anybody who signs on can get that fare. Mm-hmm. Delta's experimenting, actually doing it, where they are pricing based on your particular, what they know about you, which is a little bit of a scary
that
world.
Is. I United, have not heard about this. Yeah, so AI is now into that too.
They're booking about 3% of their fares that right now that way.
Really?
They want to be at 20% by the end of the year. United's also doing it. And of course, this raises some privacy concerns
yeah.
and some inquiries in Congress. But it's a scary world. They claim that they're working with an Israeli company, a tech company, to do this, but it's live. Mm. It's happening. Mm. There's also, so basically they want to price it at the highest point that they think that you'll buy the ticket. So no longer is it the same for everybody. Mm. You know, there's obviously fares vary depending on when you book it and, you know, what the demand is for the route. But this is literally down to the individual pricing. So every search based on your IP address may be different than somebody else down the street based on what they know about your booking behavior, habits. Are you loyal to them? Are they mm-hmm. trying to win you
right.
from another airline that you usually fly? Maybe they give you a better deal. I mean, the possibilities start to...
yeah, all that information, of course, is out there about everybody. We had our cyber expert, Brian, on the show Monday, Kathy Winger, and she agreed when I brought up the fact. I said, Kathy, pretty much everybody's information's out there. And she said, yeah, it's your information is out there everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Of course they're claiming that, oh, no, we would never.
Oh, no, they would, you know, they'll be very sensitive, sure, to your particular privacy.
But if you think about it, if my job is to extract the most amount of revenue out of you that I can, I'm going to price it where I think, is that your maximum point
yeah.
where you'll
yeah.
actually make the purchase? So here we are.
I think I will avoid that if it's got AI on it right now. I'm kind of trying to avoid it, everything with AI.
You know, another tactic that's going on right yeah. now is if you're a solo traveler, especially if the airline thinks that you were on a business trip, they're going to price that solo, that one traveler price higher than they would if you were searching for two. Now, there's
really?
Been a lot of... Also, a lot of consternation about that, but that's a reality too. They are surmising that you're probably on an expense account. You're not paying it directly. They figure you're on a business trip. By the way, you've
sure.
scheduled the booking.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pricing it higher than if you're a couple traveling
yeah.
for leisure. It's,
wow.
So that's going on right now.
Mm. It's. I think it's safe to say it's dynamic pricing.
Absolutely,
right?
Dynamic, for
yeah,
sure.
And speaking of pricing, Southwest announced this week, and they have gone live with it. After 50 years, everybody knows with Southwest, you know, you get a number, and you stand in line. That's going to go away the end of January, and they are now selling the reserve seating. Correct. And they claim through their research that 80% of their current customers and 85% of their potential customers want this. So we'll see what happens. But how will that work? Will it be just, will they then become a traditional kind of airline when it comes to booking, Brian?
That's what they've figured out, is that the only way to get at those higher revenue customers is to offer the same benefits that the big three in the U.S. offer, which are Delta, American, and United. Mm-hmm. They were not in the running for some of those high-value customers because they didn't offer and still won't offer all the amenities, code shares, lounges, true first class. But they're working hard to
thinking actually about some lounges.
That's right. It's coming because until they knock off all those differentiating points, they still may not have a chance to win over that other customer. But the reserve seating, I'm pretty sure, you know, it's not what they say publicly, but surely they have data that shows them that these changes are going to allow them to have a shot at those the top of the revenue stream that really mm-hmm. generate the profits for the airline.
Yeah.
I mean, frankly, credit cards are what generate the sure. profits for the U.S. airlines. And a lot of this is also geared to get you to sign up for a credit card. They're offering mm-hmm. very lucrative deals now to get you to get into their credit card mm-hmm. world, you know, 100,000 miles or points in their case. Sure. So this is a strategy that is going to make them look very much like the other big three U.S. carriers.
And I understand, because I read a lot of aviation news like you do, that this is an airline, of course, that's always used one type of plane, a Boeing 737. That's been the workhorse of Southwest. They're actually exploring bigger planes and looking at some big, maybe overseas routes, because they have served places like, and still do, like Belize and Costa Rica and Jamaica, but they were looking like Europe.
Right. The MAX, the 737
MAX.
Imagine
flying 737. I mean, you wouldn't fly a 737 to Europe, but they would get some bigger planes.
Right. Yeah, the MAX only takes you so far, and yeah. so if they want to serve these other lucrative, particularly business markets or high-end leisure markets, they have to be able to get to that nonstop mm-hmm. from some U.S. gateway. So, yeah, everything's on the table. They're going to do what they need to do in order to be competitive for that high-revenue customer.
All right, when we come back with Brian Kidd from Tucson International Airport, what's going on with our air service? We've got some news on that front. It's our monthly edition. The Tucson Air Service Report here with Brian Kidd from TIA. We'll be right back, Buckmaster, on a Thursday.
Vero Amore, where every certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore is located in the lovely Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell. Also, check out the full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
Travel is in my DNA. When I'm ready to start another adventure, my trip begins and ends at our local airport, Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. TUS, where it's made easy to fly. Start planning now for your next air adventure by visiting flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority invests over $100 million annually in transportation improvements in the greater Tucson region based on public input. The RTA and its regional partners deliver roadway, transit, safety, pedestrian, bicycle, environmental, and other needed improvements to meet the demands of transportation network users over a 20-year period. Learn more about the economic and quality of life benefits of the RTA's 2006 voter-approved plan and flexible funding at rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studio. Once a month, we talk about air service out of Tucson International Airport. Brian Kidd is here, Deputy Chief of Strategic Marketing and Air Service Development for Tucson Airport Authority. And a lot of people, Brian, still get the feeling, well, I can save money up in Phoenix. Well, I'm not one to get on the freeway and drive up maybe to save maybe $10 or $20, but if the leakage, if you will, of people who do live in the Tucson area and they go to Phoenix, if we could cut that in half, it would make a huge difference, wouldn't it?
That's a good goal, and it sure would. I mean, that would take a lot of routes that we really don't have enough traffic on right now to suddenly get to that stage where the airline says, oh yeah, there's enough demand on that route that works now. I mean, it's that close. I mean, that brings several possibilities into play, just if we could even do that. So what I tell people is when you make the decision to fly out of TUS, you're actually assuming it's not a nonstop already, you're actually helping us get that much closer to converting that to a nonstop flight.
Mm-hmm.
And that's people, of course, write in and say, why don't you have service to, Detroit, and we're working on that, by the way, or fill in your blank of your favorite city. Well, it doesn't work that way. The airlines have to see the demand, and then they respond to that specific demand from a specific airport. Mm-hmm. So flying out of Phoenix does us no good. I mean, anecdotally, it's also risky. I mean, my colleague traveling to this conference in Scottsdale 2 weeks ago, it turned into a five-hour journey to get to Phoenix.
Because of a traffic.
So that
all it takes is one traffic accident.
Yeah, I'd say keep track of how many times there's an issue on that drive when you're just going up there for other reasons to see what the actual percentage of time that you do it without any issues is.
Yeah.
And you might be unpleasantly surprised at how unreliable it is.
And it's not just Tucson that faces this kind of a unique challenge of marketing in the shadow of kind of a dominant market. And I'm thinking of, and you've had experience, Oakland, where San Francisco would be the dominant airport, and San Jose, even to an extent, you spent time up in Portland, even to the extent that Portland in the shadow of Seattle.
When I started at PDX, Portland was not as big a market as it was, and we were definitely in the shadow of Seattle for international, especially. The community
especially
really wanted international.
Yeah.
And everybody just connected in Seattle. Alaska ran a shuttle every 30 minutes, and that's what you did until people said, well, this community deserves its own level of service, and they got together as an air service committee and committed to flying out of PDX and not doing the shuttle anymore, and that's when it took off. It took a few years. It wasn't overnight, but again, we're not targeting anything beyond Canada and Mexico here, obviously, but we do, and we're going to continue this in our next business cycle, is getting businesses to not like just pledge,
Raytheon.
Correct.
Right.
Because I'm not going to take a case to the airlines without that prior commitment from the big players in our market, because there are multitude of excuses that come up about why, well, I couldn't do it because timing wasn't right, airline wasn't right, didn't work both directions, whatever. Like, if we were to actually put ourselves on the line to get a East Coast flight, for instance, we are going to need everyone to take that flight. Do not, even though it goes over many other hubs and there's many other ways to get to and from the East Coast from Tucson, as we talk about.
Yeah.
On the plus side, yes, there's a number of ways to do it, but on the minus side, if we have a nonstop someday, again, it's people will have to use that 100%.
Yeah. Because the dynamic, we talked about how the pricing is dynamic and whether airlines are going to be in a market. It used to be in the old days, they pretty much came and they stayed. Now they can move things around so quickly.
Right.
And that's changed completely, hasn't it?
Extremely sophisticated now and just chasing what I call micro pools of revenue. I mean, whether it's a concert or a sporting event or a ski season or a very short time frame, they're very adept at shuffling those planes around to wherever the best, not just for like a season, but for a month or 2 months. It's the planes are movable and they're moving them.
All right. So how are we doing at the airport with air service?
So the seasonal routes are coming back with the exception of Alaska's Sacramento. We'll still have Southwest flying that on the weekends, Saturday and Sunday. Orange County will be back starting in December. Of course, we're hoping to convert some of these to year-round. Portland will be back in early October and going all the way into June this year. So we're getting close. That's one that we really want to be year-round. It would be a two-a-day on E-175, which is great.
I like that plane.
Two's way better than
one. E-175, I like that plane.
Yes, it's a great aircraft. Easy to get in and out.
Yep.
Board and deboard in 5 minutes.
Yep.
Minneapolis is looking strong, especially in the spring. So Delta's extending their season on that, and Sun Country will be back on that as well. And Dallas Love Field, Southwest took a little break over the summer, but they'll be back in the market in October as well. And of course, then we have the DFW addition on Frontier Airlines starting October 9th. Just 2 a week, but it'll be at some pretty different price points than what you might see on the other airlines. So
a lot of Tucsonans have relatives in the DFW area, and they're penalized in some regards because the major carrier looks at, you know, DFW as a transition point somewhere else. So the price point's going to help on Frontier.
For sure. Yeah. If your final destination is the Dallas-Fort Worth area, it's going to be very, very competitive, especially for last-minute trips. It'll be, I'm certain it'll be way under what the other airlines are charging.
And so Frontier's going to Las Vegas still, right?
Correct. And that's, I mean, this is a pretty crazy thing if you haven't seen it out at TUS lately. Yeah. And some days they were flying it with a 240-seat aircraft.
What?
It's a 321, A321 Neo.
Yeah. It's a big aircraft.
And, you know, they don't have
medium size, but
it's a lot of seats.
Yeah, and,
but they're new planes.
Wow.
They're in great shape. Uh-huh. We may end up doing a little video on our social media about that at some point, because it's not a rattle trap. It's perfectly nice plane. It's a short flight.
Yeah.
I mean, so who cares if it's
50-minute flight approximately.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's that's the biggest plane we've seen at TUS in terms of seats since I've been there, for sure, and possibly in a long time. So
it's good to see Frontier back with their historic roots to this area, because they were one of the, back in the 60s, even 50s, they were one of the mainstays at Tucson International Airport. And they're still doing Denver, right? Their hub.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, there's a few connecting opportunities, but not too many, unless you really want to be creative, and they don't make their network. It's not a hub and spoke per se, but definitely Denver is a huge operation for them. But definitely, especially for close-in flights, you should definitely check them out, because they'll, again, be undercutting the other guys on that almost all the time. If for some reason it is expensive, it's because it's full, which is a good problem for us to have.
So you're still looking at kind of point-to-point service maybe by some of the not the major carriers.
Right. I mean, we've had several come and go over the years, and as we all know, I really want Frontier to persevere and thrive here because they're really going to be the last standing true ultra-low-cost carrier.
With Southwest making their change. That's true about Frontier. They're kind of the last one standing, aren't they?
I mean, there's some other ones out there that we talked to. There's Breeze Airways. It's really an East Coast-based airline, but they're diversifying into the West. They're being opportunistic. They're taking advantage of other people's, other airlines' misfortunes, so we say, and coming in and serving some of those routes. But they're going to encounter competition eventually. They really like to stay out of other airlines' ways, and that's good for us because we have many markets that we'd like to see served, like Austin, Boston, Orlando.
Detroit.
Detroit's been is our largest hub that's unserved. It probably would be Delta on that. But these are all in various states of consideration at all times. It's just a question of how far up we can get on the pecking order, if you will.
All right. And what about the website?
FlyTucson.com is going to be going through a renovation here. We'll have a new one live here in 2 months, and hopefully we'll have a more modern experience to it.
And the work at the airport outside.
Roadways are all done. Looks great. Nice smooth pavement.
Still to come, new carpet in the interior for the fall.
Correct. We have a little tiny bit of in front of the United Airlines ticket counter if you want to see what it's going to look like. And we have new lighting coming, new seats. It'll look, again, like a 21st century modern place.
There you go. Brian Kidd. Thanks, Brian.
Thank you, Bill.
We'll see you in a couple of weeks.
That's right.
All right. Take a break right here. Buckmaster Midway Point of the Thursday Show.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, covering your hometown.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio. Green Things, all the green things are waiting for some rain. And the human things are also waiting for some rain. Over at Green Things, 3384 East River Road by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. They've got everything you can imagine for your garden on their spacious 13-acre site over there. And they've got a fabulous collection at Zocalo Village of pottery. My gosh, Arizona's largest selection of pottery. GreenThingsAZ.com and ZocaloVillage.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. The senior scientist and former CEO and director of the Tucson-based Planetary Science Institute is with me in studio, Dr. Mark Sykes. And PSI has been around a while, more than 50 years, as a Tucson-based nonprofit engaged in the exploration of the solar system. What a time to be a space scientist. I say that by going, what a time, man. I don't know if I'd want to be in your business right now. It seems like we've kind of got this anti-science thing going on right now in this country.
It is kind of crazy. I mean, particularly when you consider that since World War II, you know, so for over eighty years or more, that it's been in the investment in our science across the board that has been the main driver of our becoming the top economy in the world, and to threaten just chopping all that down without even any thought, just chop it. We'll be talking about NASA for sure, but the proposal there is to cut NASA science by 40%, 47%. You know, the NSF gets gutted. All the medical research that's done in this country, you know, gets gutted.
What's this anti-intellectual bias that's going on in America? Why is being a smart person a bad thing?
Well, or a curious person,
smart,
you know. But this is where our innovation, these discoveries, this knowledge inspires the innovations that result in new inventions and new economies, and you know, which is why it's been such a fantastic driver, yeah, so it's just kind of mind-boggling.
But I mean, taking the space agency, NASA, back to employment levels of maybe even pre-space program, like 1961.
Right. Yeah. Certainly if one adjusts for inflation, the budget is back to 61.
61.
And in terms of personnel, it would be back to before that. And so, the one thing that's guaranteed by these cuts, I mean, the United States invented space explorations. I mean, the Russians may have been first to get a person up into space, but in terms of the robotic exploration of the solar system, we started that, and we've been the main driver of that for 60 years, more than 60 years. And we've learned so much. I remember, well, you probably remember too, when we were young and watching the weather reports on TV, and it's you get reports from ships at sea as to what the weather is out there and how that might drive in, and of course
the
paper cutout stuff that would be taped onto under the board
before the satellite.
And now we have weather satellites, and now we have
tsunami. Just an example of what happened with the huge, probably the fifth or sixth largest recorded earthquake in eastern Russia the day before last. How sophisticated, thanks to satellite technology, that our tsunami warning system has become.
Right.
They had it down to the minute of when a potentially very destructive tsunami would hit the Hawaiian Islands.
Right, right.
I mean, this, which gave people a lot of warning and everything else. Luckily, it didn't materialize as big as they had said it could have been, but the potential was certainly there.
So so the United States, in one fell swoop, would become a second-rate a space power. You know,
who then takes the mantle?
Oh well, China takes the obvious mantle because they are pushing us in terms of some of their capabilities in space exploration. I've been very impressed with them. I've met with them over in China. I like them, and they're very enthusiastic. They have a lot of great ideas and. For instance, when they did their Chang'e 6 mission to return a sample from the far side of the moon, that was a dress rehearsal for Mars sample return. They were going through all the steps that you don't have to do for returning lunar sample, but you would want to do for returning a Mars sample. So like, know what they're doing.
But even from a security and even a military point of view, why would we even relinquish that kind of space technology to a potential rival like China?
Well, see, these cuts, they basically originate, at least as far as NASA's concerned, with Russell Vogt, the director of the Office of Management and Budget. I mean, he came up with this plan to slash NASA science in half and cut its budget back in 2022, but it has no rationale. It's just, we're just going to make it smaller. And unfortunately, he is now the director of the Office of Management and Budget. And like we were saying before, I was back in D.C. For most of the week before last, talking with people, including people at the OMB. And there was, and people on the Hill. And the people on the Hill, both Republicans and Democrats, were very much in favor of trying to restore NASA, or not restore because it actually, but to mark up the NASA budget bill to reflect its kind of current levels rather than its proposed cuts.
Right.
And so while I was back there, the House had passed just before a markup which didn't go to the levels of the budget proposal by the administration, but restored a good chunk of the science. Largely back, total funding for the agency, a bit completely back. Then the Senate marked it up, bringing science back all the way.
Did that happen?
Yeah, the markup, but that's not the bill. That's them saying, this is how we'd like to fund it. And then hopefully they'll get together and pass a real budget where it's these monies are now appropriated. There was support from OMB to not cut in an anticipatory way NASA's budget this year in anticipation of what they're proposed next year and before Congress would even have a chance to act to pass a law. I was told that if the Senate markup came in flat, that there would be, they'd probably leave it alone. They wouldn't try to claw back the money or just start implementing cuts now. Of course, the people that I was speaking to weren't the top dogs. And so the top dogs are still on.
So you're saying the jury is still out whether or not this is going to happen?
The jury is still out, but at least there's some favorability.
Moving in the direction of restoring.
Again, bipartisan, as even favorability in within the depths of OMB. I feel uncomfortably hopeful, we'll have to see.
You had your annual retreat just, I believe, concluded yesterday, the Planetary Science Institute retreat. What was the message that came out of that?
We're going to have to be innovative in terms of looking at other possible ways of funding the work that we do. not relying on federal agencies as much, which makes it very challenging.
I would think so.
And in communication with other organizations and such too, to see what kind of common solutions we might be able to come up with. But there's also the sad thing is that it's so discouraging for so many people. And a lot of people are not just at PCA, but not just out in the industry in general, are looking at other career options.
And other countries,
yes. We've had
Canada.
Canada, Germany, the UK. I've had people who have faculty positions at some other universities, primarily in the South. Mm-hmm. That have contacted me about joining PSI because they feel their children are not safe in the communities where they live.
Not safe.
And, if you have a trans child or a black child, and they were looking for someplace else to live but to be able to do their work through PSI, since PSI supports distributed people, living in right now 35 states and 10 countries. So, mm-hmm. It's a real sad testimony about the politics in our country and the hate that seems to feed so much of it, particularly against migrants and people that don't look like me, an old white guy. it's very sad. But at the same time, if we're not even bothering to support the science research that we do, then I think China and plus embrace some longer term objectives. And China's, I think, doing a good job at laying a groundwork for future human space activity, mm-hmm. as well as robotic mission activity, which they're planning to mm-hmm. Extend into the outer solar system, including going to Neptune and things like that. Whereas in the president's budget, he's cutting the radionuclide program for generating the plutonium-238 that we need to create the radioisotope power units that are required for
Mars, right?
Well, for having any long duration mission that has to operate when the sun is not necessarily up at the time, or if the sun is weak because it's too far away from the sun,
right?
Which is basically everything in the outer solar system.
All right, out of time, but one quick question in that NASA budget. Of course, the moon mission, which has been delayed, Artemis, mm-hmm. is that still on or what?
Yeah, they're adding more money to it, but it's a little chaotic because they're trashing.
Cut and go.
The gateway, agree or disagree with what the plans were. They're disrupting those plans. They're saying, okay, Europe, we don't need your gateway thing, which was the plan for getting astronauts to the part of the planet, getting to the moon. So it's just, I expect that there's necessarily going to be a lot more delays just because of the chaos caused by disrupting what plans they had.
All right, Mark Sykes, Senior Scientist at Planetary Science Institute, psi.edu, for more information. Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Bill.
All right, coming up next, a big time capsule about to be revealed. That's coming up with our historian friend Ken Scoville right after this.
Located in the heart of Arizona wine country, about an hour south of Metro Tucson, Flying Leap Estate Vineyards Winery and Distillery Facilities are one of the most beautiful wine venues in the southwestern United States. Come relax and unwind at our spacious property and learn about Arizona grape viticulture and winemaking from our team of trained sommeliers and discover the intricacies of the art of distillation. Learn more at flyingleapvineyards.com.
This is your captain speaking. Thank you for flying with Tucson International Airport, where you can avoid the hassles, long lines, and the expensive parking of the Phoenix Airport. Skip the traffic, breeze through security, and park with ease, all while supporting your community. Every flight from TUS brings more destinations and better connections right here to Tucson. So next time you're planning a getaway, remember, fly easy, fly local, fly TUS. This is your captain signing off. We're cleared for takeoff.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan is funded by a half-cent sales tax through June 2026. The funding has led to a $1.6 billion investment in regional transportation improvements over the past two decades to improve your quality of life. The RTA is working on a final draft of a new regional transportation plan for future voter consideration. The $2.46 billion draft plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, environmental, and other needed improvements. Learn more at rtanext.com. The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com. Look at that, 75 degrees right now, midday in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster back with you. One of our great sponsors, Silver City, only about a three-hour drive east of Tucson. Great place to get away from the heat. We've got an extreme heat advisory going on right now, and that raised the extreme heat advisory. Might be a good time to head east. Silver City, where the elevation's 5,000 to 7,000 feet, and it's going to be cooler. Thank you, Tom, for putting up the current. Let's compare those. We always talk about 10 degrees difference between Tucson and Silver City in the summer. It's 99 degrees here in Tucson and 75 over in Silver City. Do the math. SouthwestNewMexico.org is their website for your trip planning. Let's bring in our historian on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management, and that would be Ken Scoville. Hey, Ken, how are you?
Well, I'm fine today, and I'm glad you updated me on the heat today.
Yeah, the heat. It's really, really hot. Had a one of our listeners said, here we have the 250th anniversary, kind of the birthday of the European founding of Tucson next month. And this listener says it's been mostly crickets. In other words, it's been kind of quiet. How would you react to that?
Oh, well, I think you just sort of have to look things out. There's a go online. There's a website, 250 plus, Tucson 250 plus, and the plus is for all the native people for thousands of years before the European. But there's a calendar of events. And again, the big things are all happening in August. There's been lectures and talks this summer that I've gone to and some other things. But August is the big month, and the time capsule sort of kicks it off on August 20th.
Well, I'm a little confused about the time capsule. It was part of the bicentennial, the 200th anniversary of the founding of America in 1976. It was my understanding that this was destined for an opening then in 2076?
Well, originally, and then they realized probably nobody's going to be around, so they moved it up to be 50 years later.
Okay. All right.
So that's the first thing. And this was given, this was actually a time capsule about what Tucson was like in 1975, but it was also the last event of the whole season of going from Tucson to the bicentennial of the country. And similar situation 50 years later, both for Tucson and then for the nation.
Mm-hmm. There was
the designated date has always been August 20th that the time capsule would be opened.
So do we know what are some of the items in the time capsule that's going to be opened?
No, that's part of the surprise.
Oh, okay.
I think there was lots of discussion. I would bet even money that there's a newspaper in there.
Yeah.
Probably some other.
Maybe the Tucson Citizen and the Daily Star, probably.
Right. And there were also some humorous things. Maybe a utility bill might be in there so people could see what the utility bill. Because there was an article about humorous ideas and maybe a pair of used tennis shoes and some other things. But pretty serious stuff to give you a sense of the time. And that's what, in a way, you can think of as time capsules, a way to communicate to the next group 50 years from now or 100 years from now about what was sort of life like in Tucson or wherever you are.
There was kind of, maybe there'll be a baby picture of someone that was born that particular year.
When I was doing some research at the Historical Society Research Library, I discovered, and I did not know that, we had a bicentennial baby.
Really?
And this is Leah Claudine Davis, and I've actually tracked her down a little bit. It wasn't too hard. She went to Catholic high school. I'm at a senior moment right now. But anyway, I talked to her on the phone, and she says, yes, that's my one claim to fame, and she's going to be in attendance at the unveiling of the time capsule. So that's a nice personal element to all of this.
So the bicentennial, we'll get a chance to meet the bicentennial baby who now is 25 years old.
50 years old.
Excuse me, 50 years old. Yes, wow.
It's 50 years old.
Yeah, 50 years. So when will this all happen?
No, it's on the Tucson Museum of Art grounds. It will be, and people can check the TMA website, but it's 4:30 to 6 that'll actually be happening and unearthing. And also interesting to me, and I didn't know that, but an earlier Museum of Art director removed the original location and reburied it in a different location. So, you know, life being what it is, and the Museum of Art has different directors and people have different interests in history and all that. But it's going to happen at 4:30 on August 20th, and I'm especially interested to discover, meet Leah in person. And we're trying to encourage other people that were here for the 50 years ago, not only for the time capsule, but for the other events. And everybody needs to check on the 250-plus Tucson events for all the calendar things going on. Again, August 23rd is the big day where the whole area is going to be having activities, music, presentations, and all kinds of things. So people can think a little bit about how long this place has been here and how long one of the oldest places in the country when you figure going back to 4,000 years or so.
But August 20th is the official birth date.
That's the official birth date. And again, people are looking what they were really trying, had a problem 50 years ago coming up with an actual date for the European intervention. And they couldn't find, and still I think it's a mystery, when did the soldiers come up to Tubac, Spanish soldiers, to come in and start working on the Presidio site here? We're not certain, but we are certain and have documents indicating that Presidio site was established on August 20th. So that's sort of the date that they'd gone with for an annual celebration.
And these were the soldiers coming up, Spanish soldiers from Tubac?
Yes, there was a smaller Presidio there, and Hugo O'Connor wanted to sort of challenge the Apaches, and we had more water and all those things, so he relocated the Presidio to Tucson. One other thing I wanted to just throw in, thinking about time capsules, Sam Adams and Paul Revere have claimed the fame of the oldest time capsule that they buried in 1795, and it was rediscovered in 1855, new items added, and then reburied, and then people found it again in 2014. So our oldest time capsule in the country, we can thank Sam Adams and Paul Revere.
There you go. And we thank you, historian Ken Scoville. Thanks, Ken, and we'll keep you posted. Thank you.
Hope to see you down at some of the events.
Okay, thanks. Ken Scoville with us on the Buckmaster Show as we wrap it up for Thursday. Got the police chief with me in studio tomorrow on behalf of Tom Fairbanks and all of us here at Bustos Media. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.